This is Roots Pod.
Sherry. Rufaka's in behind. It's Rodriguez. Johnny Rodriguez scores for Oakland.
Welcome into Roots Pod. This is Aaron with John and Peter once again. And, you know, I feel a little weird about how many episodes in a row we've had good stuff to talk about. I mean, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, right? Since our last episode, the Soul were knocked out of the W League playoffs by the slimmest of margins. A kick save prevented them from tying up their match with Olytown, FC Olympia, whatever that team is calling itself, the Artesians. And so the Soul go out in the first round of the W League playoffs for the second year in a row. But that's a great season. You know, you can't ask much more than go undefeated and get into the playoffs, especially when you're in a pre-professional setting. So that's awesome. But all eyes turn to the Oakland Roots now, and they are ready for their moment in the spotlight. The Roots welcomed to Hayward, California, arguably the best team in the USL, and won. I mean, am I reading this correctly, that the Roots won with a 62nd minute goal from Johnny Rodriguez? Is that?
Feels like you got to say the second best team in USL because they just lost to the Oakland Roots.
It's unbelievable. The Roots now, I mean, this is torrid stuff. 7-1-3 in the 11 games that Gavin Glinton has been on the sideline. And he was rightly rewarded with what, Coach of the Month or something? He had some recognition from the league. I don't know. I try not to open the league's Twitter account, but some recognition from the league, which has been a few weeks in coming, because this team looks nothing like the squad that we saw at the beginning of the season. I mean, what a game. You know, is this the second game in a row? Yeah, it's the second game in a row where we kind of had to sit around and think, who actually stood out here? Like, this is a team performance. You know, it's not a 1-0 is not spectacular, but it's Louisville City. I think they're still probably the odds-on favorite to take the league this year. And there we are, Oakland Roots still sitting in second place in the Western Conference. I mean, these are not sentences that I imagined that we would be saying at any point, you know, back in like May or whatever, March, when things looked really bleak. But here we are. I mean, it's hard to come up with. Part of the problem is that what we do on this podcast is shit talk, and there's just so little to shit talk right now.
Well, we haven't gotten to Pittsburgh yet. There's plenty to shit talk
well,
about.
Well, okay.
I like Louisville had some big chances that they missed, but it was like, you know, they had what, three or four big chances, and they missed three or four big chances in all of their games. They just also get three or four more other chances that they convert. So, like, I think the Roots also held Louisville to just way less offensive output. And so I don't think it was, you know, there's some luck in them not converting those chances. But, you know, they held them to an amount of big chances where luck could allow the Roots to win.
I mean, Louisville was on top of that game for about 25, 30 minutes at the end of the first half, right? I think they were kind of feeling each other out of the first 10 or 15 minutes, and then I want to say someone got injured and the Lou City coach called his players over and they made some adjustment and were just on top of the Roots for the rest of the half. And then they didn't get a sniff in the second half. I mean, that's incredible.
They had an opportunity to equalize, I think. But yeah, no, I mean, the second half, I think, favored the Roots, although I think there was probably a 10-minute period of possession from Louisville City that you're kind of forgetting in there as well. But yeah, no, I mean, it's like other than that, the end of the first half, I think the Roots played them basically even.
Yeah, I think that result's a testament to the defense there. And, you know, in the second half, yeah, Louisville did have a couple chances. The biggest chance that comes to mind was, I think, a header at the right post that Paul just got there at the exact right time, you know, couldn't have timed it more perfectly. But what Louisville finished with 9 shots, 3 on target. That's a testament to what Gavin had planned for the night. I mean, to hold Louisville to 9 shots, which is their least amount of shot attempts. And, you know, I clicked back pretty far, and the lowest I could find was 10 shot attempts in a game. So that's a testament to that coaching staff, that team, the quality that they have. So to hold them, to limit them to 3 shot attempts, I mean, it speaks a lot to the system that Gavin had planned. You know, they shut down the middle, kind of forced him out wide, a lot of dangerous passes out towards the front of the net. And, you know, like you guys mentioned there, like Gavin mentioned in the post game interview, that they started slow. You know, there was some tough moments there in the first half, but, you know, they've responded well. And, you know, I think about it, and every game so far under Gavin has been, you know, a second half response has been there. I mean, maybe other than the Monterey game, you know, certain circumstances there, late red card, but, you know, to have one bad game in 11 here, I mean, it says a lot. Says a lot to the quality, says a lot to the energy around the team, which we're seeing. It's a real testament to what Gavin is doing, and what a resume of wins so far for him. Louisville, Sacramento, Orange County, Tampa Bay. I mean, that is a murderer's row of a schedule right there, and he's doing it. So, you know, hats off to the team, hats off to him. It's fun to watch.
So after the loss to Switchbacks on June 1st, the Roots under Glinton had 2 wins, 2 losses, and a draw. And their upcoming schedule was Rowdies, Republic, El Paso, Monterey, Orange County, and Louisville. And if you told me the Roots do really well in that stretch, I would have thought you meant 3 wins and a draw, not 5 wins. You know, I might have even said 2 wins and 2 draws qualified for really good. And, you know, it's just been much better than that. And, you know, you pointed out Monterey as an exception to Glinton's absolutely outstanding halftime adjustments. And I don't even think it was, because I think that game got away from Monterey. Was that entirely in the first half that Monterey gave us trouble? They scored in the 30th and the 48th. And I think a lot of what went, hey, why are there? I was kind of joking about it on the Discord, is that they didn't have an answer to Chuy Enriquez, who is, you know, like at his best, he's this difficult to contain wild card. And he came on somewhat unexpectedly when they got an injury in like the 20th minute. And even though he wasn't the goal scorer or the assist, I think he created a lot of the chaos that prevented Oakland from controlling the game, from keeping things calm as they have in their best games under Glinton. And I think that things got better in the second half. You know, they scored shortly after halftime, but otherwise I think that his adjustments worked. It's just like we discussed after that game, you know, Johnny had these chances and he largely didn't put them away. So anyway, all of that is to say Glinton's doing great. And I, you know, he's like, other than his ability to sort of keep the games under control, I think his biggest strength is exactly what you were saying. They come out of halftime and they tend to do what they need to do.
So this stretch, this very successful stretch, prompted a question in the Roots Discord that Peter wanted to bring up on the pod. So I'll bring it up now and throw it out there. And the question is this: given where Oakland is, and again, that's second in the table and on an incredible winning streak, let me provide slightly more context. John, you posed a question a couple of months ago, which was basically, if the Roots make the playoffs, is that enough to bring Gavin Glinton back for a second season? And I think you and I both said yes, and Peter acted like maybe he had bigger expectations for the team, but I'm pretty sure he ultimately came around and said yes too.
I think what I said is, for an interim manager who you didn't go out and do a coaching search for, just making the playoffs isn't necessarily enough to say that we should make a long-term commitment to this person. That's why you do a coaching search. I think that's the
best possible reading of what you said.
I mean, for the record, Aaron, you were the only one that said,
Unequivocally, yes. I do recall that I was the only one who's like, yeah, of course. Like,
yeah, you were the only one. Our standards were a little higher, but we'll get into it more. I think standards have changed a little.
Right. Well, so the question now that was posted on the Discord by Dan Ratto, Roots super fan, and I think Roots blog listener. So, hey, Dan, how's it going? Was basically this: have the expectations changed? Is at this point, now that we've seen what this team can do and they're in second place, is sixth place good enough? Are you disappointed with sixth place? And I'll add on to the question, if the Roots fall from second to sixth, does that color your view of whether Glinton should be made permanent as the head coach? Now, before I let you answer, John, I want to put out there that your response, which was it's very much clearly informed by the athlete instinct to give non-responses in all possible ways to all possible questions, was, I'll say yes, but my opinion has changed, and these opinions can still change based on how August, September, and October go, which is like the least amount of information that you could possibly give in answer to this question. So let's
it is the question, right? Because right. Like we know how October goes. They get sixth. That's the hypothetical.
So I'm not going to let you give that answer now. You're going to need to be a slightly more specific. Let's start with a yes or no. Is sixth place acceptable?
Yes. And here is why. So we have an intern here at Roots Blog. This intern's great. Really gives us a lot of good information. We call him Chat. I asked Chat, what would be enough to bring Gavin Glinton back? I asked this back in June, you know, after everything had unfolded. And the response was, you know, there's a lot of metrics involved. It's the points per match.
So are you saying that Chat also answers questions like an athlete?
In a way. Hold on. I'm getting there.
Chat was like, well, first I got to give all glory to God.
I just do what my coach asks me to, you know. Love to go out there and have a chance to contribute to the team.
You know, we're out there
just trying to improve every day.
We're out there for each other.
That's right.
Just try to get a little bit better every day. That's what Chat does.
All right. So Chat had some metrics.
Okay. So metrics, but also what I think is more important right now is qualitative assessment, which is team morale, cohesion, player development, tactical acumen. So at the time I put that fourth was the target. I don't believe that is the target. I was just putting that as a means. And, you know, let's go to the metrics. And I think what got Delgado his job in 2022 was the last stretch of the season that he led them to the playoffs. That, ironically, was 11 matches where we are right now with Gavin Glinton. At the time, Noah went 6-1-4. Glinton is 7-1-3. Delgado had a 1.7 points per match. Glinton has the highest points per match of all the coaches right now over this 11 match stretch at 2 points per match. No coach has gotten close to that. So 16 goals scored, which is the same exact as Delgado in his 11-match stretch in 2022 as interim. 13 goals allowed. Glinton has 11. So slightly more goals per game, slightly less goals allowed per game. Glinton's averaging 1 goal allowed per game, which is the lowest of all the coaches, which is Delgado, in these stretches. So you look at Delgado at... Let's look at him when he was at his best, which was in 2023 before the winless streak started. They were 11-7-7. They had 1.6 points per match, averaging 1.4 goals per game, allowing 1.12 goals per game. So Glinton is above those in every metric. So are the metrics exactly what you're looking for? I mean, not necessarily. I don't think the science is you know, all the way there, but I think
what's more important. Science?
analytics. I think what's more important is the assessment of the team and how they're performing in this system. You're seeing in that qualitative assessment that there is a team morale. He does have the belief of the locker room. There are improvements in this system that would show long-term growth, because the question here is, at the end of this season, do you believe Gavin can provide the long-term growth that another candidate can do? So by these metrics, I mean, the answer is yes. And I think right now, 2 points per match, that would put them right in line with Charleston, who is second in the East. I mean, it would put any team in the top two or three in their conference. So that's a lot to hold on to. But I mean, we're seeing a different mojo of this team. We're seeing that there are signs of a system and a style of play that can improve over time. I mean, Glinton is, you know, he's very impressive. And I think that my answer to that has changed to yes, playoffs are enough as long as we can see that there are these signs of development in the system. He's developing players. We can look at Trayvon Reed. We could look at players who are surging in his system. Justin Rasmussen, newly signed player. Gaggi, newly signed player. Camden Riley, newly signed player. If all of these players are surging like you wanted, it means that at the end of the season, you don't have to make as many roster moves. You're saving some money there. But it's also that it's what you want to accomplish, right? You want to see the development of the players that Jordan Farrell and Nana have signed to this roster. Because, I mean, when you think about it, any new coach that comes in, they're going to have to work with a lot of these players. They're going to have to prove that they can get it done with these players. At least a good majority of them, we can say, especially in 2025. So, yeah, the question is, can you keep hitting those strides and can you show that there is a clear form of development and players are getting better and the stats are showing it, which they are right now, then, you know, I think that eighth place is enough. I think seventh's enough. I think sixth is enough. You know, just getting in, I think now is enough with these signs of life that we're seeing. So it's important to see these 15 matches left in the season. We could even look at what Delgado did over his first 26. He had 12 wins, 1.6 points per match. So I think that might be a floor. If he's not exceeding these, I mean, even those numbers are pretty damn good, 1.6 points per match. If he can stay around that, not go below and go above it, then I think that the front office should be very comfortable with a decision. Long answer. Yeah, sorry.
That was a very long answer at which you restated the question twice to different questions.
Different
questions. The question was, true. Is sixth place a success? You did answer that question at the end. I will give you that.
Yes. And the beginning.
I think that the answer is that sixth place is a success. This question was also posed in the form of, is sixth place disappointing? And I think that there is, like, in the grand scheme of things, no. Sixth place is not disappointing based on our expectations going into the season, and I think that's what we have to stick with. But I will still, if this team does that, sort of gradually, slowly gets a little bit worse, I think it'll be a little disappointing. Like, emotionally disappointing, but not like the season was a disappointment. So that, I mean, that's where I am on it. I also think, you know, right now, if you look at the games in hand, the Roots are probably more like fourth.
For me, that's really the key. And I don't even know if I would describe a slide to sixth as necessarily involving gradually getting worse. You know, I don't want to say that they're overperforming, because they deserve to beat the best team in the league, which is, I mean, that's impressive. Right. They've got some mojo and they are playing very well right now. And, you know, when you look at the fact that they're second in the West is not undeserved, but
7-1-3 with a plus five goal differential. If you extrapolate these kinds of numbers out to a full season, you get a team that's in the, I won't say the top tier USL team like that Phoenix team from a couple of years ago or the Sacramento team, but comfortably in the next echelon. And I think what we probably need to keep in mind is that teams that play at that level in just about any sport in the world don't get there by winning games by the smallest margin they possibly can all the time, right? I mean, I think baseball is probably the easiest way to think about it. If you break a baseball season into 16 10-game stretches, which, you know, it is, but if you take those 10-game chunks, a team that wins 100 games in a season is going to be 5-5 or 4-6 in the majority of those 10-game chunks, right? They'll probably have one really long winning streak, and they'll have a couple other stretches where they're hot. But for the most part, you're kind of 50-50. And it's the teams that are able to have those, who are able to like dunk on teams in the course of a game, that really show up in the top tier of most of the time. There are obvious exceptions. The 2004 Detroit Pistons played what I think, from the perspective of a 2024 NBA fan, was some of the ugliest basketball you've ever seen. And they won the championship. Leicester City scraped by for an entire season and won, the Premier League. So it's not like there aren't examples, but it would be unusual to win every game by a goal, you know, like they kind of have done. So I think just a rebalancing of luck. I'm actually not even sure they're getting lucky, but the fact that you're not always, there's going to be some ebb and flow to the luck you get. And the fact that there are two teams right behind them with two games in hand, I think you have to look at sixth as being more than acceptable, even though I think this team is probably capable of hosting a playoff game right now. Plus, you could have injuries.
It does get, I mean, the road gets easier, though, if those teams that spent money in the offseason and can't get their act together, like Phoenix, if they go into fire sale mode and say, this season's scrap, we're just going for next season, the Roots get Phoenix one more time or two more times. Have we played them yet? We played them the third game of the season. So that, you know, that doesn't necessarily endure to the Roots benefit, like in terms of facing them two more times. But if they go essentially out of the running because they decide to dump some contracts and save money for next year, that makes things easier. Likewise, Tulsa may actually already be doing that intent. That doesn't really help us get to sixth the way that Phoenix doing it does. But, there's some outside chances there. There's also some teams that with as much depth problem as the Roots do, and they could fall apart with injuries the way, it doesn't help the Roots get to sixth that Sacramento has had injuries. That may help the Roots get to second, but sixth.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of the teams in this league are kind of on a knife's edge at all times.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a whole lot to blow you in one way or the other. And I take your point about the road getting easier. I mean, they have mostly played the difficult games on their schedule. I mean, knock on wood, the two games against they have SAC and New Mexico United at home, and that appears to be the principal competition for those top couple of spots in the table. I mean, Colorado Springs is right there as well, but New Mexico United has looked like the best team in the West all year long, and Sacramento, they have some quality players, and like Jack Gurr is back now, and like that's not an easy out, right? But on the other hand, like you look at the really difficult trips that are coming up, like they got to go away to Miami and away to Rhode Island and away to Hartford, which on the face of it sound like god awful road trips. And I mean, really, in terms of travel, that's terrible. But those are three of the four. Actually, we'll get to this there. They also play on the road Pittsburgh Riverhounds coming up, and that's all four of the teams in the East who are currently not in the playoff spots. If you're going to have to travel 3,500 miles to play, so I feel like that's the kind of matchup you want to get. I mean, that could come back and bite us.
It has before. I mean, but you're right. You'd rather have it that way than the other.
Yeah.
And Loudoun are on, one of their hottest streaks, I think, in their history. but they have to come to Oakland. They're the ones who have to eat that 3-hour time change.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks good. It wouldn't be disappointing. I think they could continue playing at this level and end up deservedly in sixth, and it wouldn't, no one would really be. Things could happen. They could also continue playing at this level and be first in the table by the end of the season, because you never know. I mean, the other thing to mention here probably is that they are fifth in the West in goal differential. There are only four teams in the West with a positive goal differential. It's difficult to fathom exactly how this happened, but it's not like the teams that Oakland is currently battling with for the top of the table are running away and hiding, you know?
Well, and their goal differential under Glinton would be tied for second.
Yeah.
They're +5 under Glinton, and that's what Memphis has in second.
Well, and if you extrapolate that out over the other 8 games.
Yeah, I figure there's only so much credit we should give that when we're like, well, let's ignore the bad games.
Well, that's, I mean, most sports analysis involves some amount of let's pretend space and time don't function like they actually do. The other thing that could happen, of course, is that, I mean, we have spoken glowingly about how good Oakland tends to look coming out of halftime, and they've done a very good job of figuring out how to use the personnel they have to clog up the middle of pitch and make life difficult for other teams, and it's been very successful. But also at some point, you know, the book could get out on Oakland. And I think one of the things that has people feeling so optimistic right now is that you sort of would have expected it to happen by now. And it hasn't.
Yeah, because it seems like the book on... It seems like what's working for the Roots is it's very hard to get the ball past Hackshaw and Riley. And our midfield bruisers are preventing them from even getting under as much pressure as they need to force a mistake. And I don't know that there is a book on that, you know? I mean, the book on Hackshaw is outrun him, but if he just hangs out in the back and you can't run in behind him and you can't punish him, you know, with these shots from outside the box, then it's just like, all right, you're going to have to get him in the air or something, you know? So like, I don't think the Roots are unbeatable now, far from it. But, you know, I watch every one of their games and I don't see how I would beat them. I have seen a bunch of teams of varying qualities try varying things and none of them are really working.
Well, take 100% of your chances, basically. I have a perfect conversion ratio and I think you probably win.
It's what Monterey did and it's basically what Colorado Springs did. You know, the Roots weren't quite in as good form then, but basically they got a goal gifted to them in the second minute and then they didn't do shit. But they were at home and they're at altitude and the Roots aren't really set up to punish you. And so the game, you know, their soccer terrorism for 88 minutes ended in 3 points for them.
No, I think that the book not being out on Glinton is, you know, praise to him. We've seen him run out a bunch of different combinations. We see that the formation kind of fluidly changes on the field. It goes from 4-1-4-1 to the 4-3-3 to 4-4-2, and I think that will help keep some you know, defensive game planners off balance. And yeah, you know, Glinton has said that he wants to have an unpredictable team. We'll see how teams, you know, start planning for him. You know, I'm not a soccer guru. I don't know how. I'm not really sure exactly what they're even doing on the field sometimes, but it's you know, we're seeing this system at work and we're seeing an unpredictable nature of Gavin being able to get good results with multiple different formations and different players doing different things. You know, Cam Riley is a perfect example of that. Look, he was playing the midfield. Gaggi gets injured and you move Camden to the back there so he can provide that passing with Hackshaw. Really good defensive set passing, but also good pressing out of that center back spot, which is, I think, what made Gaggi his most valuable there. and still Gagne made some nice passes, but his ability to not let the ball get out of the opponent's half was, I thought, what made Gagne my player of the year so far. But we're seeing that with Camden come in there, and it's, you know, the X's and O's are the same there. We're seeing Camden do a lot of the same things that Gagne did, really keeping that high press, and also even more versatility. He moves into the midfield still out of that center back spot and can generate some chances. I think Gavin's unpredictability is something that, you know, he can put on his resume, at least right now.
That's a really weird resume, honestly.
I got into it this week with someone who listens to this podcast and watches every game, who was making the argument that Glinton doesn't actually rotate that much. It looks like Gavin rotated a bunch and changed the formations because early on he did. And partially that was the San Jose game. And then we also had a Wednesday game for like San Antonio, maybe. No, those were all Saturday. So it was just the San Jose game. And that basically since then, the only two reasons he's made any changes to formation or personnel are because Gagne's been hurt and because we had a midweek game. And that there really are no more surprises in the lineup. That what we saw last week is the lineup. And when Gagne comes back, there will be essentially one change. And I thought that that was an interesting point because it is not how I had viewed things, but I'm kind of coming around on it. It just aggravates me because I continue to have some problems with our central midfielders as we currently line up, who admittedly had great games against Louisville.
Like John said, we're not really soccer gurus, but John, I'm going to go back to you here. You don't really need to be a soccer guru to find the issue in the following set of games. This is Oakland's next opponent, Pittsburgh. 0 wins, 2 draws, 6 losses in their last 8. They've scored 1 goal and surrendered 10. So I just...
And if you make that 7, they've scored no goals. They have not scored a goal since June 1st.
I almost don't want to say it out loud because you feel like they're due, but... John, what would you say the problem there is?
Yeah, dude, I hate this. I hate this. You know, I feel like we just put a curse out there.
Well, as long as we're digging that hole, let me dig it a little deeper and say that if you go back to May 4th, they have 4 draws and all of the rest are losses. And 3 of those 4 draws are against teams in the bottom 3 of their conference.
Now, John, I understand your point about curses. I think that's odd coming from you, since you have previously told us you don't believe in them. But also, I'm not sure how we speak about this Pittsburgh Riverhounds team right now without discussing the fact that they haven't scored a goal in 6 games.
They have 11 total goals. They have a 3-1 win over Phoenix, and they have like 8 goals in their other...
They had a stretch 10, of
17 games.
They had a stretch of 6 games. Am I reading? Yeah, 6 games where they scored. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Give me a second. They had a stretch of 5 games where they scored 9 of their 11. 2 goals in the other games. This is not an offense that's got to be fun to watch.
No, yeah, it's got to be. It has to be. I mean, we can talk about Pittsburgh not being anywhere where we expected. I mean, looking at the whole standings, East and West, I mean, there are some teams where they are just nowhere where anybody would typically expect them. I mean, maybe someone saw Pittsburgh dropping all the way down to 11th this year, but I sure didn't. I always considered Pittsburgh one of those, you know, those top organizations in this league, you know, one of those organizations you look up to, the Phoenixes, the Tampa Bays, the, you know, those type of teams. And they are just not that. So, I mean, ripe for the picking, and Root should be going in there confident. Maybe they can come back with one of their players. You never know. But no, I mean, we don't know. It's not going to happen. But
maybe they can grab a midfielder. Someone?
Maybe they could grab a midfielder from there if they got one. Who knows?
Well, I think The concerning thing is that, and the thing that I think will make this difficult is that it's a difficult flight out there. You know, it's that cross-country trip, and Pittsburgh's defense is good. They are in a five-way tie for third in goals against per game. And I think that that's the rub. I mean, the hard part is going to be the Roots coming out of there without a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, that's about the size of things. These are two very good defensive teams, one of which scores some and one of which doesn't really. And unfortunately, the team that scores some is not the home team. Hopefully, they've got some strategies to deal with the jet lag. That's going to be the key.
Yeah, I mean,
that's really it.
Well, and yeah. I mean, I think the other thing to look at, if you want to be optimistic about this, is that if you look at Pittsburgh's last five games, they only have one clean sheet. They have an away draw against North Carolina, but they conceded two to Hartford, who aren't any good, one to Louisville, who are, two to Lights, and one to Monterey, who, you know, if there's one thing that Roots fans know, it's how good Lights and Monterey are. And the answer is, similar to the Roots. So, like, that, you know, I think there's reason to think that the Roots can go in there and score, that this, basically, other teams have realized they don't need to worry about Pittsburgh anymore, and so we're getting some more goals past them.
Yeah, you started that by saying if you want to be optimistic, and I want to make it clear, I am optimistic about this. It's just sort of unsettling.
Oh, it's worrying.
How bad Pittsburgh's offense is. What kind of situation we find ourselves in here. I mean, John, I assume you're going to predict a clean sheet. How many? You're gonna try to confuse the gods, the sporting gods, by predicting that Pittsburgh will score in this game?
I am, but I'm going to confuse them even more, confuse the soccer gods even more, because I'm going with Gavin to set another franchise record, 5 goals, Roots win 5-1.
Good Lord.
We're going for it, man. He's just knocking out the records, knocking out the milestones. What's one more? Let's see. Either he can get 5 goals or Roots finally get another hat trick score. Which one would you guys take?
I mean, I'd take the 5 goals over a hat trick. Who gives a shit about it? I mean, a hat trick is like fun or whatever, but obviously I'd rather have the 5 goals. What I really want to know is how much money you're willing to put on the 3 first half red cards, because I'm on for whatever action you're interested in.
No, nothing there, John.
What are we betting?
We're betting on the result you just predicted.
5-1. What's the payoff if I get it right?
I don't know. I'm not good at this kind of math.
is there math you're good at?
Mind. Yeah.
Like, what are the odds here? What are the odds am I taking? What does a dollar get me?
Our eternal gratitude is what it gets you.
A firm pat on the back.
The old attaboy.
I think I'll go. I came in and I was going to say 2-0 Roots. I think I'm going to say 1-0. And that feels like I'm being optimistic. I feel like this is the come down and it's going to be 0-0. But I just don't want to predict that. So I'm going to say 1-0 Roots on the road. And it's not easy.
I mean, I predict 1-0 every single time. I don't see any reason to change things right now. This seems like the perfect game. It's set up for 1-0, so obviously it won't be 1-0, but when the Roots win 1-0. That's the modal outcome here. So I'm going to continue predicting it. Watch party this weekend is at Almanac, yeah? I believe, Almanac?
Almanac.
So that's nice. You know, I saw a headline this week. I did not click into the headline because I got as much information as I needed from the headline. I didn't need any caveats or any explanation or anything. It was 1 to 2 beers a day takes about 2 months off of your life. And I know.
That's for easy trade. Right? Easy trade.
this is the greatest deal.
There was a Dennis Leary bit from the 90s. And like, yeah, Dennis Leary kind of sucks, right? But I'm pretty sure it was his bit where he was talking about how they talk about drinking and smoking takes years off your life. And he was like, yeah, but then the 10 years at the end that suck, where I'm in a wheelchair and have a stoma.
Yes, that's about the size of things. I suppose you could make the argument that those last few years, because of the alcohol, will be rough, but we won't know until we get there. We're actually just performing an experiment here is what's happening.
As Roots fans, we are definitely conducting an experiment to see how far this can go. How many beers?
Oh, you make the, for a second there, you made it sound like a bit we've all decided collectively to be in on, but
the joke the universe is playing on us as Oakland Roots fans.
Yes, as Roots fans, we're actually conducting a number of experiments at any one time, and you're very lucky if you know which one you happen to be involved in at the present. But you'll be if you visit Almanac this weekend, you'll be involved in the one that three of us are involved in, which is seeing whether or not two drinks a day takes only 2 months off the end of our life. So, you know, that'll be a good time. It's good beer. And I assume also they have non-alcoholic options. I want to just, you know, put that out there. I'm sure those are good, too. Come on out. We'll have some fun, hopefully, watching the Oakland Roots play the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. And until then, up the Roots.